Brian McClain is Hesher, and both are on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Brian McClain Show. I'm Brian, otherwise known as Hesher. Thank you for sticking with us into the second hour here. Second hour, we're going to be joined by Alan Stevo, and we're going to be talking about his book, Face Masks Hurt Kids. But first, is COVID done, as President Let's Go Brandon said? President, where am I? President, what is going on? Said the COVID is pretty much done, even though the White House and science god Fauci sort of disagree with him. So is the get the jab or else rhetoric done? Is the emergency authorization for experimental mRNA biotech gene-altering mystery injectable juice done now? Are the masks done then? Let's look through the headlines here. I'll just pick a site. I'll pick a mass media cartel site. Let's just say Newsweek. I'll type in face masks. What do we get? Oh, look at this. Look at this giant list of headlines here. Bill Hader praised as apparent only person wearing a mask at the Emmys. Oh, no. GOP candidate says COVID-19 masks linked to satanic ritual abuse lawsuit. Oh, my. CDC says people exposed to COVID no longer need to quarantine. What? Scientists warn against repeated reuse of masks for at-risk groups. Internet slams interviewer who laughed at candidate wearing a mask. New COVID strain could push cities back to mask mandates. Anthony Fauci did not wear a mask in private, says Kellyanne Conway. Internet slams hiring manager who demanded person remove mask at interview. Oh boy. Scott Walker, maskless plane photo, sparks ridicule. So clearly this mask thing hasn't been considered done just yet. What about in schools? California mask mandate returns as schools say wear masks or stay home. An indoor mask mandate has been reinstated for students and staff in the San Diego Unified School District amid rising COVID-19 cases. The school's district decision to reinstate indoor masking came after San Diego County moved into the quote-unquote high category of community transmission set by, you guessed it, the CDC. Indoor masking will be required at all schools and district offices for at least 2 weeks, the district said in a letter on Friday. We will continue to monitor the COVID-19 community level according to the CDC and the county data, and we'll communicate if there are any changes, the letter said. With regards to the students, please send them to school or their program with a mask. If they do not have one, masks will be provided. Students and staff will be required to wear their masks indoors only. That's the end of the quote. San Diego Unified Board President Dr. Sharon Whitehurst Payne defended the policy in an interview and said students who don't want to wear a mask should not return to school. She said they really should wear the mask. They should just make it known that they don't feel comfortable at that point and just not return. They can go to our school that's online. They can opt not to return to the regular school, but to go to the school where they don't have to go to a school at all other than via Zoom. So masking, definitely still a thing. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. And that's available right now to download. Do it, and we'll keep you up to speed on TNT Radio.
At the risk of being canceled,
it's a battle for free speech against the left.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh, yeah. Cancel me. I dare you. My guest is a nationally syndicated columnist. His work has been widely published by editors and institutions as diverse as the Daily Caller, The Hill, The Epoch Times, The Mises Institute, Economic Policy Journal, The Los Angeles Review of Books, The Manhattan Institute City Journal, Emerson Journal, Plain Dealer, Lexington Leader, and The New York Post. He's been a tireless advocate for more fair treatment of individuals under the law for over two decades, from the disabled to those with severe medical conditions. He's pushed for individualized approaches rather than one-size-fits-all treatment our institutions often foist upon those in most need. And he's the author of Face Masks Hurt Kids, a book that digs into the research of how masking is not neutral to the wearer, but unquestionably harmful, especially to children. His name is Alan Stevo. Alan, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
Brian, it is so good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for taking the time. I hear you got canceled from HuffPo. Is that something you could tell me about first? Because I hadn't heard this story yet, and I'm curious.
I've been canceled all over the place. It's I have the joy on the internet of simply being it's hard to find some of my more controversial work, and I appreciate that sometimes. I appreciate being able to hide. But I don't have too good of a story on that topic. There's something you did just say when you were bringing up San Diego. May I follow up on that a little bit with a neighboring school district?
Oh, please do. Yeah, I'm very curious about this.
There's a school district called San Diego. And now if you do a public records request, the government body needs to give you the information you ask for. It's basically your right to see anything government's up to, with very few exceptions. So, private entities are not subject to public records requests. Government entities are subject to public records requests. So this lady, she's a mom down there, Allison Stratton, just outside of San Diego. She's with a group called parentassociation.org. She did a public records request, and there happened to be in the principal's inbox, one of the teachers union folks, they accidentally CC'd the principal, and they had this whole chain that ended up in the public records request because they accidentally CC'd the principal. The teachers union hired operatives to go spy on the parents who wanted the schools open again and wanted the masks taken off. And this, you assume this kind of stuff probably happens, but this, just a few weeks ago, she found proof that in a public records request that the teachers unions are literally going after parents, singling them out, trying to figure out, what their agenda is and trying to silence them.
That is, I wish I could say that's staggering, amazing, surprising, but I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. With the mass amount of Karening. Apologies to my friend Karen out there who sports that name very proudly and nicely. But with all the Karening, if you will, of the COVID era, I'm not surprised to hear this at all. I mean, people just lost their minds over this stuff, Alan. It was insane. I mean, I was keenly involved in watching all these little disputes that were happening on social media in 2020 and 2021. I saw people attacking each other, spitting on each other, having just freakouts and wobblers in public about the mask, about this and that, for or against it, airplane fights. I mean, it was crazy.
It was, what I like to encourage people of, I like to just kind of point to, every morning you wake up, you can expect something even crazier today than what happened yesterday. And you can get all caught up in that. You can spend your time thinking about Klaus Schwab for 10 hours a day, right? You can spend your time thinking about your triple mask neighbor for 10 hours a day and worrying, why doesn't my triple mask neighbor have more courage, right? You can trouble yourself with this kind of stuff. And throughout all periods of history, there have been these hyena type people who, the Faucis, the Bill Gates, the Joe Bidens, who are looking to manipulate the situation, to take control of others, to really just kind of like seize power at the opportune moment. And those people, as intimidating as they may seem at times, those hyena like people throughout all periods of history, they've had virtually no impact on the trajectory of history. And you can look at the triple mass neighbor with his 8 vaccines, and that group, they're kind of sheep-like. And I don't mean that in the derogatory way that people often do, but there's good comparisons there. The sheep-like folks, they're just kind of getting through the day, looking for who the best leader is out there that they can follow. And, for a time it was, I don't know, Andrew Cuomo was the best leader they had in mind. He had the greatest leadership potential, or Tony Fauci. And that narrative is crumbling. So they're just kind of looking around, who's the best the best leader out there. And that's in all periods of history. That's the majority of the population. And they also, the majority does not determine the trajectory of history. Then there's this third group. And throughout the last 2.5 years of nonsense since the Ides of March 2020, I've been trying to encourage people as much as possible, pay attention to this third group. And that third group, those are the lions. And the lions determine the trajectory of history based on whether they be asleep or awake. And if instead of spending 10 hours thinking about Klaus Schwab, who I personally don't know, maybe a listener or two knows Klaus Schwab personally and has impact on how his life goes. But instead of spending, 10 hours a day thinking about Klaus Schwab, what if you spent even half that time thinking about the lions around you who are asleep and helping to wake them up, or find the lions around you and helping to encourage them? Like, I've never found anyone depressed about COVID who is paying attention to the lions, giving their attention, focus the lions. And I think that's like quite empowering.
Yeah, I agree. I tend to do my best to surround myself with lions, preferably ones that aren't sleeping all the time, because we need them right now. And we need the mama bears too. Mama bears are a big deal, and mama bears are not hibernating right now, are they, Alan? They're activated. They know what's going on.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I go up and down the California coast, and I have these organizing meetings. And it frustrates me a little that there's the ratio is very high women to very low men. I'd like a few more men to stand up more rigorously. But the such amazing warriors I find, and people get just kind of down. They'll talk bad about California, for example. And I'm kind of happy to be in California. I get to live my life right now at the spear tip of this battle. And there's all these people going to other states and things like that, and they're kind of, as far as I'm concerned, they're kind of running away from the front line, because this is really like the front line for the fight. And what's happening in California, the same is being planned for New Hampshire, for Idaho, for Arkansas, for Tennessee. And this is, we stop it here. Maybe we get to stop it everywhere, And the mama bears that you bring up, this is just like, there's groups like Moms for Liberty, and a few moms get together and they're like, we got to put an end to this. And before you know it, a bunch of other moms are signing on to it. And I'm seeing these school board races around me where you might have gotten 5 people, 10 people at a local school board meeting. I've seen this year. I saw one meeting that had at least 250 parents present in the meeting, and another 250 parents online watching on Zoom. 500 parents at a school board meeting. It's preposterous, but that's the kind of period we're in. I don't know. We're about 50 days out from the midterm election, where there's a bunch of parents suddenly standing up and saying, we're getting on the school board. This is never happening again.
Mm-hmm. No, I love it. I love it. I had one of the representatives from the Freedom Angels join me a few weeks back. I like that group out of California. There's so many people in California now who are completely clicked in, completely in the zone. And they realize that this has gone way too far. And by this, I mean, this, a number of things, but in particular, masks is one of them. And more generally speaking, the way that policies are run in schools just ramrodded, like right over the heads of parents, pretty much into agenda-focused zones rather than, child development, child care, child education, child safety zones. It's just completely insane. So it's great to see that. I'm also seeing that in political candidates. I've had a number of, I've had a Senate candidate. I've had a number of House candidates out of California come on. And I'm actually one of those refugees. I was born and raised in California, lived there for 40 some odd years, and then moved out here to Texas. But I keep a keen eye on California, and I got to tell you, it's inspiring, and it adds a little bit of hope to see what people like you are doing, what people like the people we're talking about are doing. Moms for Medical Freedom, Freedom Angels, And of course, the people running for office over there in California, like there's a big groundswell of taking California back and across the board, like in all different departments happening right now. And I'm really happy to see so many people speaking out, getting themselves activated, getting themselves at those school board meetings. 500 people. Oh my gosh, that's insane. That's amazing. That's exactly the kind of stuff we need to see. We'll pick up right there, though, on the other side of a station break here. We're going to take a station break, everybody, with today's news talk.
Christina Borgeson on TNT Radio.
3 months after being appointed CIA director in 2017, Mike Pompeo gave a speech in which he said, quote, "It's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is, a non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors in Russia." In January of this year, our intelligence community determined that Russian military intelligence, the GRU, had used WikiLeaks to release data of U.S. victims that the GRU had obtained through cyber operations against the Democratic National Committee. That's all Mike Pompeo talking here. Actually, even today, no proof of this particular allegation by Mr. Pompeo has ever seen the light of day. His characterization of WikiLeaks, which has always been a media organization whose work product was widely picked up and published in other major media outlets, is also inaccurate. Nonetheless, Pompeo and the U.S. intelligence community, aided and abetted by operatives in other nations, has led a ruthless, relentless international intelligence community operation to all but kill WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Julian Assange.
Christina Borgeson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, let's do it. My guest is Alan Stevo. He's got a new book, Face Masks Hurt Kids. I want people to check it out. It's got a lot of information in there that you might find helpful, like 181 reasons not to wear a mask, like 40 pages of scientific citations, like 376 health problems caused or exacerbated by masks. All right, so you're going to want to check that out. Welcome back, Alan, and thanks again for joining me today. We're talking about California before we went to the break here, and I'll take your comments on that. I am inspired to see the heart and soul, that lion heart and soul that you and many others have displayed to me here on the show out of California of late.
I like that. I like what you're saying. You brought up Face Masks Hurt Kids. This is the second book I've written on face masks since this has begun. And the book's a big thing. It's 500 pages, and it's built to take to your school board meeting, to your city council meeting, to your county meeting, and to pound on the podium for emphasis a little. And it's a big book. It's a long book, but it can be read. You can get what you need out of it in about 20 minutes. It's set up with very short chapters, 2-3 pages, that you can really, every title is a talking point. You skim through it. No, that's not interesting to me. You know, it's not interesting to me that children's IQs drop. It's more interesting to me that children have pregnant women harm the fetus by wearing a mask, right? You know, maybe that's a more interesting topic to you. Choose that chapter and you read into it. But this, it gives you like, it gives you the talking points you need to go take on a doctor, to go take on a principal, to go speak at the school board meeting, whatever it is. Now, with the school board, something I've been seeing, this is so exciting to me, that I've imagined for a time that they have the bad dudes in this scenario have overplayed their hand, and that we wouldn't end up back in 2019 with those freedoms. We'd end up with freedoms that like our grandparents couldn't imagine would be returned. And I'm just starting to see the beginning of that. Tuesday, let's see, a week before this Tuesday, so about, what is that, 9 days ago now, I held a little candidate forum. There were nine candidates invited, six of them attended, and I was most interested in vaccines and masks, and I wanted to know that they wouldn't vote to mandate the COVID vaccine. They wouldn't vote to mandate face masks on children if they were elected to school board. They wouldn't do it if they were threatened with personal lawsuits, as has happened throughout the last 2 years to board members who tried to stand up. It wouldn't happen if they were threatened with jail time, which has happened to board members who have tried to stand up. And it's happened very subtly where their own lawyers come to the board and say, well, technically, this is breaking the law. Technically, someone could arrest you over this, which is preposterous. That wasn't going to happen. But their own lawyers, they let such a scumbag into their meeting. They paid for the person to be there just for them to give them some drama about, well, you could be arrested if you stand up for the children. If you don't rubber stamp Gavin Newsom, you might be arrested. Total nonsense. So this new crop of board members is prepared for that nonsense. And, you know, I basically asked, you're gonna stand up no matter what? And each of these six people who came to the meeting, they said, who's running for school board? They said, no question, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to stand on my values no matter what. And then someone from the audience asked just a wonderful question, just for clarification. You've talked about the vaccine here. You're going to stand up against these mandates no matter what. Are you speaking about the COVID vaccine? Or are you speaking about all vaccines? All six people said, no, I'm speaking about all vaccines. There will be no more vaccine mandates of any vaccine in this district. It is a parent's choice who gets vaccinated, when, and why. And I heard that. I couldn't believe it. And I know this particular district where we're having that, that's like a microcosm of California. There must be, I bet there's like 3,000 parents running across California right now who have those same values. It's beautiful. The vaccine mandate for school children, it's totally upheld by the CDC. It's totally upheld by the states. In public school and also in many private schools, it's forced. But at the school board, these parents are saying, we're not going to be a rubber stamp anymore for the legislature. We're going to take down these mandates with permission or without.
Oh, man, that is very heartening to hear. I wished in 2020 we would have had this groundswell. But you know what? I guess, you know, we'll look at the positive here. And one of the silver linings is that people are doing their research now. And I think before we just did not have enough people doing their research, too many people busy with that 9-to-5 under the spell of the mass media and the social media and the confirmation bias they experience with their friends and family. But 2020 really thrust us into, I don't know if they anticipated this, Alan. Do you think they anticipated like how much time your average, you know, 9-to-5er out there, you know, your mom who wasn't on the PTA before or even cared what the school board was doing, all of a sudden, all these people had plenty of time to research their whole world. They got handed what they were being told is the new normal. They immediately felt something was off with it, and then they had to experience whatever they had to experience over 2020 and 2021 to get to where they are now, where it's like, oh, crap, everybody, this is so much worse than we thought. And now we see the trajectory. We see where they're headed with it, this whole thing. They want to rubber stamp all these things. They want to institutionalize all these things. I was talking about Biden's new executive order before in the segment before you came on, and you know, all of the, you know, the system, the federal or global system, if you will, the system of NGOs, you know, all of everything, what it appears to be nudging us towards this future of biotechnology, bio research, mRNA cures for this and that, which is hilarious to me or frightening to me. I'm not sure which. I have to have my gallows humor to survive, but very strange to see them pushing in that direction after they've rolled out their first one on an emergency basis. And it's been an abject failure. Everyone who's taken it has gotten COVID multiple times. This hasn't stopped anything. It hasn't changed anything. Arguably it's made things much worse and hurt people. And that's a whole, you know, other offshoot, but I'd love seeing the groundswell of care and support and knowledge and research and people building up their context so that they can debate about these things at the student council meetings or the teacher council meetings or the PTA meetings or the school board meetings. It's absolutely wonderful. I almost dropped an F-bomb there. But I'll take your comments on that after we take a break here. And I want to also get your comments on how your book can help these people who are now wanting to get in that fight, wanting to be activated, and need to know how to fight talking points with talking points, fight fire with fire. I think your book might help them do that. We got to take a quick break, though, Alan, and we'll be right back with today's news talk.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Former President Trump continues to insist he declassified all the records amid the probe into what the FBI sees from his Mar-a-Lago home. There was a second earthquake in Mexico this week, where one woman was killed falling down the stairs of her home while a man died of a heart attack. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is asking allied nations for more support in his country's fight against Russia. He appeared virtually in a pre-recorded message to the UN Assembly on Wednesday afternoon.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk. TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
All right. His second book in a series is called Face Masks Hurt Kids. His name is Alan Stevo. Alan, welcome back to the show. Tell us a little bit about what I was talking about there before the break there, how this book, tell us a little bit more about how one can take this book and just bring it with them. You don't have to sit down and read the whole book, right? You can skim through it and you break it down. From what I can tell, it looks like you break it down in a way that you're helping people defend themselves from propagandic talking points and from people with ideological agendas associated with COVID or with whatever. I'm sure this is a lot of the skill set that you put forth here is probably transferable to some other topics like vaccines, as you mentioned.
You know, Hesher, everyone's seen all kinds of videos, all kinds of YouTube videos, all kinds of little clips over the past few years in which, they come to conclusions that their view is accurate, right? Their intuition, perhaps, that the face mask is harmful to the person wearing it. You know, slowly through these videos, they come to recognize it, or maybe they read an article, maybe they read a headline only, maybe they see a journal article and they really dig deep into it, right? This has been many people's experiences, and kind of the way we interact with information these days. It's not like you have a newspaper in front of you where you can easily clip the article. You're probably not going to bookmark the exciting story you read. You're not going to write on some note cards what the Dewey Decimal entry was of the exciting book that you came across. So we have these ideas in our head, but maybe we don't have those ideas saved, how to access them exactly, how to get back to them. And what I did with Face Masks Hurt Kids, and it's really a book about how face masks hurt everyone, that it begins by going to the science of that the face mask is not neutral on you. It's not, hey, if the face mask is neutral, why not just wear it just to make others happy? Why not just wear it, you know, just to protect grandma? No, the truth of it is the face mask is unsafe and ineffective. So I don't know, maybe it's the first 20 pages of the book, I get into the ineffectiveness of it. And I cite everyone from the CDC, May 2020, while politicians at the CDC were saying, oh, put your mask on, scientists at the CDC in the CDC's own peer-reviewed journal of epidemiology called Emerging Infectious Disease, the scientists at the CDC, 3 weeks after the mask mandate went into place, said, hey, we've known about these masks for a long time. We've tried them before. We know it's just superstition. We know it doesn't actually work. We got to do things that actually work. COVID might be a real thing. Why don't we do things that actually work instead of wasting our time with superstition? That's what scientists at the CDC were saying in May 2020. So I go into that science a little bit. And then, like you said, I kind of break it down. You can just take on anyone with 20 minutes of looking at this book, just reading the chapter headlines and figuring out which chapters are important to you. And then drill down to those chapters a little bit. I got the footnotes if you want to say, well, where did this really come from? You can go poke into that if you want. If you want to spend hours going into the footnotes, you can totally do that. But I know that what's needed really is this resource, this manual that says, here's all the stuff we know about face masks from 2020, 2021, and before, and this is how you can use it effectively. So it's really there to have that to take on the doctor, to take on the principal, to take on, not that the principal means much in the grand scheme of things, to educate the board member, to go lobby a politician. Very useful for this.
Oh, yeah. This is a perfect tool for that. And you make a really good point there. I focus on this a lot, just the inbound information stream. The inbound information stream that 21st century men and women are dealing with is it's dangerous, it's toxic, it's meant to burn you out, it's meant to polarize and atomize you, it's meant to scare you, all to affect change and those things, increase polarization, atomization, et cetera, and to install identity politics and agenda-driven sort of maxims and memes. And that makes it very difficult. That is actually, I consider that to be hybrid information warfare, quite frankly. Militaristic hybrid information warfare that is meant to demoralize and degrade a culture. And that's exactly what it's doing. So when that is the case, and this is being done to an extent that the human history has never seen before, this is this ability to just pump toxic information into the whole of the planet at once is pretty new. And unless that happened in Atlantis and that information was burned down in the Library of Alexandria, as far as we know, it's never happened before. So it puts us in a very interesting place. And I think you and I probably share that feeling of understanding just how monumental that is, like where we are in history, and like you were kind of talking about that earlier, like it's easy to wake up and go, oh my God, Schwab again, Schwab. Oh my God, Fauci again. I hate these guys, and just allow yourself to get down. But this is a pretty interesting time, my friend. It's definitely inflicting harm and violence upon people. No one likes to see that. But the fact that you and I can get together and do this on a platform like Today's News Talk and talk about a book like this in a world where no one is supposed to know that this book exists because the media has been weaponized against us in that way is amazing and inspiring. And it's things like that that keep me getting up early in the morning. I'm not traditionally a morning person, but I love getting up early in the morning and preparing for these shows and meeting people like you, because it helps me understand that, hey, society is starting to get it. Society is starting to not only just have to put out the context, and the understanding the context is where all those black pills and negative stuff are. But then people like you come on and we start seeing solutions and we start seeing examples of the flame of freedom and liberty popping up in people in places that we thought were maybe lost and forlorn, like California. So that being able to just cut through some of that with a physical book, everybody, that's so valuable right now. I can tell you that as a black pilled, toxified media analyst. Something like this book is might be just what you need in your fight to regain your freedom in your community.
And Brian, for folks, for folks who want to supplement to that book, I've got you can go to my website, realstevo.com. And the website is really just an entryway to my email newsletter. And I send out emails every morning. I shoot for every morning. Some days I miss, but I shoot for every morning. I send out emails every morning to encourage people, say, hey, I'm seeing this in the world, and stay focused on these values. And I get wonderful response from readers. Just that I know their email inbox is full of garbage, full of PSYOP headlines. And I want them to always be ready to know. I want them to know, you know what? There's going to be one good headline in there today. It's going to be something that's going to lift me up. It's not going to tell me, oh, it's hopeless. It's not going to confuse me. It's not going to be, you know, even friends do this to you. If you're sending your friends headlines that are depressing, I just like to say, please stop sending your friends depressing crap, because that's part of the PSYOP too, right? You're shooting the enemy bullets in the psychological war if you're sending the depressing headlines. You got to have a pretty good reason to share a depressing headline with a friend. So I want to be the inspiring voice. And you know, buy the book, don't buy the book. Cool. I still want to be the inspiring voice. So I got realstevo.com. You can sign up there. Realstevo.com, realstevo.com. And you'll get emails every day. And Brian, you know, you were saying this platform that we're on, how exciting it is that we can have this conversation. I had the chance to speak outside Facebook headquarters. There was a rally against censorship. I got to speak alongside Robert Kennedy Jr. I got to speak alongside Naomi Wolf and a bunch of other wonderful luminaries. And it wasn't like this moaning, crying, oh, stop censoring us, great Facebook, right? It wasn't that. It was, I know that we live in this era. Listen, Brian, the most censored influencers of today have more reach, have more voice than you know, like mid-level influencers from 50 years ago. And maybe we're more censored today than we were 5 years ago. You know, we can make that argument. But there's so many ways to get around the censors. And it's inconvenient. But this is like you're living in a time where it takes you 10 minutes to go set up something on the internet, and you can have reach around the world. And if you're saying something interesting to people, you can have like quite an audience built very quickly. This is the opposite of censorship. Instead, they want to convince you that it's not worth fighting, that you should just give up, that everyone's censored. Why even write the book? Why even write the book? Amazon will just deplatform you. Do you know how many people, 50 people maybe, have said to me, why would you even write a book like that? Don't you know Amazon's just never going to carry it? Well, they haven't deplatformed me yet. So, and if they did, I'd go figure out some other way to do it, and it would work fine. But we're not as censored as people like to claim, and we have so much reach, and this is so important to keep in mind.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you. You know, that has always been a battle of attrition. I always use this metaphor when I talk about this. Like, we go back to, you know, internet 1.0. It was a bit of a wild, wild west. But then there's all this hacking stuff, all these open holes, all these inefficient machines. And then as the industry builds, you know, they build in all this proprietary stuff, and they start kind of taking ownership of everything. And these big companies like, I don't know, Oracle, Facebook, like buying up. I actually graduated with my bachelor's in computer science right in Y2K, right before the dot-com bubble burst. So I got to be like right there near Silicon Valley as the bubble burst, and as I was graduating with a whole class of people who thought they were going to be immediately rich in these IPOs that were, you know, just, you know, forming like less than an hour away from where we were going to college. So it was really interesting to see all that happen. But the battle of attrition, man, that just keeps happening. Like right now, everybody thinks, well, social media is dead. But, you know, there is this whole idea of the blockchain and decentralizing. Like, we're actually going to retrieve encrypted communications on the blockchain. And we have we're in a giant battle with big banking and finance to keep control of decentralized currency, cryptocurrency, and not have that be usurped by central banking digital currency. But the technology, the people that wield technology and the people that use technology are always intermingling and trying to figure out, you know, how they can have control or have freedom. And that's going to keep happening. You know, we've got like, you know, plenty of like there's this new app. It's similar to like Telegram or Signal, and it functions on the blockchain. So nobody's in charge of it. Nobody has your data. And I think they're super afraid of this. And that's one of the reasons that they try to make people feel the way that you just said, where it's like, well, why would you bother? They're just going to censor you. They're just going to cancel you. It's like, you can't give up in this information battle, because you might get canceled or you might get doxxed or it might not work out. Like, this is our fight. It's the only fight worth fighting right now. And, you know, there are opportunities and options in technology coming down the pike that we can use to be able to keep doing this. So, yeah, again, my hat's off to you for putting yourself out there. I don't think people like you and I have conversations like this in public, because it enriches us greatly or brings us vast amounts of friends or fame or anything like that. I mean, we simply just want to be able to make sure that open communication is still allowed to happen if we really got to break it down.
Spot on. You know, I'm hearing something great from you, that you're really, you know, some people, there's kind of like a Luddite group in the freedom movement who will say, if it's electronic, it's evil. If it's electronic currency, it's evil. And I'm hearing from you that you understand the different flavors of electronic currency, and that some are more free than others, and others are like more, you know, basically an extension of the central banking system we have now, and aren't very attractive in a lot of ways. And this is, you know, I'd love, you want to talk more about this in the future? I'd love to. In 2013, I started Bitcoin exchange in New York City with some friends. It was right next to New York Stock Exchange, and you could walk in with cash, you could walk out with Bitcoin. It was such an exciting time to open a Bitcoin exchange. It was so good. And the,
oh my God,
the New York Department of Financial Services came along at the behest of the bank. The big banks did not like what we were doing. We were right next to the New York Stock Exchange. We would go have trading. We would go start an impromptu trading pit outside the door of the New York Stock Exchange. And we'd have 40 people in our trading pit out on the street some afternoons. It was amazing. And we'd have more people on the floor of our exchange than there would be on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. This was just like brilliant stuff. So, you know, the regulators came along at the behest of the banks, and they're like, no, this can't go on. And they just kind of destroyed the Bitcoin ecosystem there, which really rivaled Silicon Valley in a lot of ways. The you know, this technology tools, every tool, not just technology, it's value neutral. You know, it's in the hands of who is using the technology, right, that makes the value matter. And the with search engines, I do the same. For example, if anyone listening is using DuckDuckGo still, I'd like to discourage you from doing that. My team and I ran some tests on DuckDuckGo versus Google versus Bing, Bill Gates's Bing. DuckDuckGo was the most censored search engine we were able to find. And I'll give you a free report if you want to sign up, even realstevo.com/search, realstevo.com/search. I've got, if you want to nerd out on it like I like doing, I got 25 pages that you can read on that. But right on the front page, I say, these 11 search engines are awful. These are what our tests determined. These two search engines are the least censored search engines. I love nerding out on the technology. It was wonderful what you were saying just now, Brian.
Oh, I do too. We'll do some more of that together, and maybe we'll do it right after a quick break here. We're gonna take one more quick break, and we'll be right back with Alan Stevo. We're talking about all kinds of stuff. We're talking about masks, we're talking about technology, talking about censorship. What an awesome episode. So check us out, tntradio.live. Please share this around, because, you know, Alan and I, we're a little bit censored, but we don't care. We'll just keep doing this, and you folks share it around. All right. We'll be right back. TNT.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
And just like that, with the midterms approaching and Democrat poll numbers plummeting faster than the Dow Jones Industrial Average, Pete O'Pete announced the scamdemic is over. Are you sure you want to do that, though, Dementia Joe? Because if the scamdemic is over, so too is the quote-unquote emergency. And if the emergency is over, that means that the emergency use authorization for all the tests and all the gene jabs is no longer applicable. Phase two of this needs to belong to we the people, because too many of us are dropping like flies. The leading cause of death for those under 40 is suddenly or unexpectedly. Meanwhile, headline after headline reads, doctors are baffled. Baffled? We've known for 2 years what the leading cause of death would be, and we were right. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
It's 4 a.m., Monday, and you're literally sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. Man, that's love. And if you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. To make sure your child's in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Why listen to TNT Radio? Because friends don't let friends listen to mainstream media. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm joined by Alan Stevo. Find him at realstevo.com. Is that correct, Alan? Did I get that right? Realstevo.com.
That's correct. That's where you can sign up for my email newsletter.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. So sign up for his newsletter. Get the links to order his book. You can order it on pretty much all book platforms right now. You got to get the book, folks. Definitely. Face Masks Hurt Kids. It's about so much more than that. Let's see. Where do we go from here, Alan? You want to talk more about tech and censorship, or do you want to like get into some specifics within the book? You know, I mean, I've got a million things I could ask you, but we've got about 9 minutes left. And if you got something burning a hole in your pocket of importance, you want to make sure to get into this episode before it goes out. Let me know. What would that be? What's important right now when it comes to this?
You know, before the break, you'd mentioned, you know, Biden's executive order, and you know, you kind of mentioned, did they think there would be this kind of backlash? And you know, there's this within public health, there's kind of a area of thought called public health motivation theory, and it looks at, you know, if Brian doesn't want to take the shot that public health officials say he needs to take, what are the arguments that can be made so that Brian says, you know, I really do want to take that shot? Or so Brian at least says, well, I'm not so hesitant anymore about that shot, or I guess I'll let them do it. Right? If there's this field, it's called public health, right? But it's the very opposite of medicine, right? Medicine has this going back. The Hippocratic Oath goes back about 2,500 years, the concepts, and it predates that, the idea of medical ethics. And many doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath, which is fine. There's still this concept of medical ethics. And it basically says that it is the responsibility of the doctor is for it to be doctor and patient together against the world, that the rest of the world doesn't matter. Even in war zones. And there's movies made about this, but it's true that the doctor in a war zone, he has the responsibility to treat the enemy soldier as well. This is part of medical ethics, that someone is dying, they become your patient. Someone needs you, if you have the resources, they become your patient. And this idea here is just totally contrary to what public health says, where it's saying not doctor and patient together against the world. It's saying the world against the person standing against whatever the world wants. The world against the patient saying, no, that's not going to happen to me, or no, that's not going to happen to my child. And this needs to be like, you know, recognized when, and this is an MD that also has a public health degree. It's like it's very unusual to find one that isn't just totally collectivist, totally against the will of the individual patient. And it's important to recognize that kind of philosophical difference that they like to use the term public health. And that was a term developed in, I don't know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s to say it was a way of kind of hiding what public health was about. It was a term that polled well. And it sounded good. And that term has stuck. But public health is the exact opposite. It's an industry of control, effectively. So you bring up this executive order from Biden. And now, something important to keep in mind when Biden signs something, there's like, 18 layers of bureaucracy between Biden's executive order and you that need to be motivated to go do something. It can be really hard. You can walk through the day and say, well, the president signed something, so I'm going to comply. Or you can say, whatever the president said had nothing to do with me. It imposes upon my rights, which don't come from the president. And I'm not going to follow that. And in fact, I'm going to go have a talk with my sheriff. I'm going to have a talk with my elected officials. I'm going to make sure they recognize they're supposed to stand up next alongside me. And if they won't, this is what it really comes down to, that when I've written at length about face masks in a book, Face Masks in One Lesson. It tells you how to never wear a face mask again, how to do it ethically, how to do it safely, how to do it legally, to literally never wear it again. I live in San Francisco. I live in downtown San Francisco. I don't wear a face mask for any reason. I live a normal life. If I can do that in downtown San Francisco, you can do it wherever you live. I have no question about that. So if you have the will, and many readers have written me saying, hey, how do I get by without this face mask? And, we put our heads together, we sorted it out. And it works. These methods work over and over again. If you know how to say no to a face mask, see, the face mask is about so much more than just the face mask. If you know how to say no to a face mask, you know how to say no to so much worse. You know how to say no to the shot. You know how to say no when they come for your guns. You know how to say no whenever they come up with some nonsense executive order and say, now you must comply. Well, you have all the tools. If you know the face mask is a gift from 2020, it's this very low-hanging fruit that lets you say, no, I'm not going to be doing that anymore, and to have a rational conversation with someone about it. And literally, so many of us have been asleep since 9/11, right? When 9/11 happened, government said, child, go to your bedroom. We've got this from here. And many of us stayed asleep until the Ides of March 2020. Many of us, and some of us stayed asleep beyond that. And this is the opportunity, right? The face mask is an opportunity to wake up, to train your muscles. And we can't be disappointed that somebody can't run a marathon 2 minutes after waking up, after spending 20 years in bed. It takes time. Face mask is a wonderful way to train those muscles. And if you can't say no to the face mask, if you can be convinced to wear it once in a while, then the same can happen with the shot. You just haven't heard the right reason yet. The same can happen with your guns. You just haven't heard the right reason yet. The same can happen with everything you hold dear. You just haven't heard the right reason yet. So now is a wonderful time to make that stand. And these are the kinds of things I talk about when I send out these emails from realstevo.com, meant to encourage people, meant to get people going every day to say, I can stand against this nonsense. I'm in charge of this. I have authority over this. It doesn't matter how much media, it doesn't matter what 53% of the population thinks, or 33%, or whatever the number is. I know that I'm an individual responsible for my own life, for my own home, for my own family, and maybe for my community. And I can do that. And the way they win this psychological war, it's not a kinetic war. There's not bullets flying. The way they win the psychological war is by demoralizing you, by deflating you, by convincing you it's not worth it. And the way you win is simply by standing your ground, staying focused on your values. And this, I think, is a very hopeful message.
Oh, yeah. I love what you just said. And I love that you are living in San Francisco and proving it. I didn't wear the mask, the ritual muzzle of shame out here in Texas. We didn't wear them out here. I mean, a lot of people did, but not in my household, my friend. And got a lot of funny looks for it and whatnot. But you know what? I am my own body sovereignty. I am my own freedom. And when people like you and I can get together and demonstrate to people that this is okay. I can't believe we even have to say that in a country like this that was designed to be a constitutional republic and all, but it's okay, everybody. It's okay to say what you want. It's okay to not wear the ritual muzzle of shame. It's okay to send 500 parents out to that school board meeting to make sure that your education system actually serves your children. And it's okay to not wear a mask ever, 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 because face masks hurt kids, and not just kids, but you and I too. All right, Alan, we got to go. We got to let everybody go. Give them your website one more time. This has been Alan Stevo, everybody. His book is Face Masks Hurt Kids, and you're going to want a copy of that. Thanks, Alan. You got about 10 seconds to say bye to everybody.
RealStevo.com, RealStevo.com. I want to be that voice of encouragement in your inbox every morning. Thank you for having me on, Brian.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. We'll do it again. We'll do it again. We'll have a deeper conversation about crypto and stuff like that. All right, everybody. Face Masks Hurt Kids. Pick up the book right now by Alan Stevo. We're going to go to top of the hour news, and we'll be back with Sumo.